and welcome to another episode of Downtime with the Cranston Public Library. We're a podcast for cool people who love libraries, where we talk about what we've been reading, what we've been watching, and what we've been loving. I'm your host, Taylor, and the branch librarian at the Oaklawn Branch Library, and my pronouns are she, her.
Hello, everyone. My introduction is going to be highly pandering. My name is Mary Mahoney. My real name is Mary Margaret Mahoney. My profession is historian, writer, podcaster. No offense to my parents. I'm married to a librarian, huge fan of libraries, and my mom is from Rhode Island, so I am pandering there too. Just want to appeal to Rhode Islanders listening to this. I do live in Connecticut, don't hold it against me. Co-author of Dolls of Our Lives, Why We Can't Quit American Girl, and co-host of the podcast of the same name.
My name is Allison Horrocks. I am a public historian and park ranger by day. I live and work in the northern part of Rhode Island, which, if you are Cranston-based, is very far away. My pronouns are she, her, and I am also a co-host of Dolls of Our Lives and co-author of Book by the Same.
All right. Thank you both for joining me. As I said before we recorded, I've been very excited about this episode. As a longtime American Girl fan, I had a doll when I was a kid, even though I was probably a little bit too little to fully take care of her, but it was before they came out with the baby dolls.
Got it.
But I still loved her, sometimes to the detriment of her hair, sometimes a little too much. And yeah, I've just been an enthusiast, as I'm sure both of you are, hence why you made your podcast and wrote your book. And so we'll get a little bit into why we love this franchise so much. But before we get into that, let's start off as we always do with, what have you been reading?
I'm reading three different things, two of which go together, one of which is for fun, maybe all of which suggest I'm not well, but we can circle back on that. But I'm reading or listening to The Power Broker, Robert Morris and the Fall of New York by Robert Caro, because I've been listening to 99% Invisible, which is a really great design podcast, where they're kind of taking this book on. It's from the 70s, which led me to now reading Working by Robert Caro, which is about his process as a biographer and a historian, which is really fascinating. But I'm sort of at odds with him in the book, so I don't know what's going on with me that I'm diving this deep into his work. But for fun, I just read Iris Kelly Doesn't Date by Ashley Herring Blake, which is a great WLW romance novel. If you know, you know. And I know that gay books have been under attack, but this one will get no attack by me. It was great. I read it in like a day. Really entertaining. Highly recommend.
So I am currently reading a book by Ashley Elston called First Lie Wins, which is a pretty like typical modern thriller, but I'm really enjoying it. And I figured I'll talk about the last few library books I took out. I really liked a book by Michelle Gagnon called Killing Me, which was sort of an interesting mystery, kind of like modern setup, kind of a lot of twists and turns. Also really loved a book that we covered on our podcast called Hoops, which I took out of my local library. That is a graphic novel about one of the first really successful women's basketball teams based out of the Midwest. There's a few other things that I've been enjoying, and I won't mention my do not finish, but I'm grateful to my library because it means if I don't finish, I feel less bad.
Yes. We don't love to, we don't call them out on this podcast, but we are a big supporter of a DNF. If you don't love it, let it go.
Absolutely.
I don't think I've been reading anything that has not been touched on the podcast. I guess it was mentioned on the podcast previously, but not by me. I did start reading Yoga Life, which is all about customizing yoga and allowing yoga to be in other parts of your life besides just like on the mat. And I feel like it's very down to earth and acknowledging that like not all of us every week have time to like go to a 60-minute yoga class. And like the part that I just finished reading, it's like sometimes what that 60-minute yoga class is offering is not like what we need in order to bring like balance to our life. Even if I'm not like fully bought into the whole like Ayurveda dashas, they're called, they're like the archetypes. I do like the idea of being aware of the different types of yoga and going towards a type of yoga that's bringing the balance to you that you need in that moment, even if it might not necessarily been what you're originally drawn to.
Fair.
So I thought that was interesting.
Very cool.
So thank you, Robin, for that recommendation. Listeners who've been listening since the beginning of this year, even if I'm not doing it every morning, I'm still doing it.
Respect. I'm trying to work out a better daily schedule myself. So maybe that's actually a really good idea for me to adopt. There's just too many good books. I mean, this is probably a relatable problem, but I usually read before bed and then I fall asleep and never get as far as I want to or stay up till 2 a.m. Neither one is great.
Yeah. For me, it was to avoid scrolling on my phone in the morning. Like that was very much like a go-to activity for me while eating breakfast. And now I've kind of, for the most part, like I said, I'm not perfect with it, but replace it with reading like a chapter or two. And I feel like that's just like a better, more fulfilling way to start my day than just like full of all of this sensory stimulus from the internet.
Absolutely.
So besides reading, have either of you been watching anything interesting lately?
Oh, we're always watching things. I'll have Allison go first because I went first last time.
I am pretty far into a show called Death and Other Details, which is on Hulu. So it's sort of a closed door mystery. And it's very much like in the style of an Agatha Christie. It's set in the present, but it has a lot of kind of old fashioned settings and like very kind of over the top outfits and interesting characters and side plots. The show is more episodes than I thought. I thought for once it was a good example of streaming restraint, but I think it's going to be like 8 or 9 episodes total. That's just about the only thing I'm watching and or sports by osmosis, you know, like accidental sports coming into the feed of other things I'm trying to watch. You know, you can try to avoid the Super Bowl or big games, but it's going to find you. So those are kind of my primary right now.
Respect. I'm also watching that show and I can co-sign with Mandy Patinkin. It's great. I am watching sports on purpose, but only women's basketball, which I highly recommend. Winter is like my time for mystery season, which is sort of a lie because I watch mysteries year round. But I just started watching Mrs. Sidhu Investigates, which I'm watching on BritBox. But it's about a caterer, a widowed caterer, who is retired and inserts herself into murder investigations. And it's a great show. I don't know what to say. It's cozy. Nothing gory happens. It entertains me. And I'm also a reality TV person, so tragically, I am watching Vanderpump Rules, which just restarted. I watched one episode of something that is very ill-advised called Couple to Thruple. Happy to answer questions about that, but, you know, I'll just leave you with the title. It's on Peacock. You can check it out.
Sorry, I just have to sit with that for a second.
I've seen the first episode and I'm still sitting with it. And I did subject my wife, and I had visiting friends this weekend, and I just announced like we're watching this in the same way that last week I forced Allison to watch This Is Me ... Now, the preview of Jennifer Lopez's upcoming visual album film. I'm putting that in scare quotes. That's not a TV show, but I would just love to, everyone, please hit pause on this episode. It's that important. Go to YouTube, search J-Lo, This Is Me Now preview. It's 2 minutes or so. You're going to see Fat Joe as her therapist. You're going to see tease Neil deGrasse Tyson as a member of the cast. Derek Hough plays one of her husbands. It's apparently based on her life. I'm not kidding. It's the most like chaotic, upsetting, uplifting, enlightening 2 minutes these eyes have seen in quite some time. Have you seen this, Taylor?
No, I have no knowledge of this. I don't think I even fully understand what a visual album
basically is. She's trying to Lemonade, but okay. It's not going to be that. Like Lemonade is one of those like monumental moments. Like I remember where I was when she dropped it, watched it immediately. It still holds up. It's amazing, right? This is not going to be that. Like, I'll just say that. This is not going to be that. No shade to her. I mean, somewhat shade, but it's, I don't know. There's quotes in this trailer alone that have stayed with me in the 2 weeks since I've seen this. At one point, she says to presumably one of her husbands, "You remind me of home." And the man looks happy momentarily. And then she says, "I left home for a reason." And you're like, damn, like, what is this?
I cannot pause because we need to finish recording.
Okay.
So I'll just put that in the back for later.
You know what? I commend your commitment to professionalism.
Oh, Dave has a message for us. Okay, Dave has a link for me after. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Dave. I hope you've seen it and you know what's going down. Remember your life before and then remember your life after. It's going to be different.
Okay.
Yeah.
As close as I get to mystery, because I'm not a big mystery person, I watched the first season of Ghosts recently, which is, again, another recommendation from the podcast.
Great show.
I for once am finally, like, when people are recommending things, actually getting on it and watching it instead of being like, oh, I should watch that and then forget about it.
Yes.
But yeah, I really enjoyed it. And I ended up requesting it from the library thinking that I was getting the British one. And then the one that I got was the American one. But then I recognized the guy who plays the husband, and I think he's very funny. And so I was like, you know what? I'll just watch the American one first then. But now it looks like no library has season two. I don't know if it's just like not out in physical media yet. Or if it's one of those things where it will never come out in physical media because the streaming services, I don't know, like to lay on their hoard of gold like a dragon slash hate libraries, possibly both.
Wow.
yep, hot takes. I get why they do it. Like, it helps their bottom line, them keeping hold of it. But it, for us providing access to things as a library and us wanting to provide as much access to things as we can, it's tough when things don't come out in physical media because then we can't loan them to people, or things become way more complicated to loan to people when they are not in physical media.
I'm with you.
But it was very fun, and I like am very anxious to watch the next season because I just really fell in love with the cast of characters of the different ghosts that live in this house. It was one of those things that I like kept thinking about the characters and like kept being like, oh, I should watch the next episode of that. And then I'm like, oh, I can't because I finished it. Like I finished everything that's on the disc. It's done. And that hasn't happened to me for a while with the show, of really just being like, oh, I should watch more of that. And then being like, oh, I got to figure out how to do that first. Paramount Plus, you were going to get me one way or another, and I'm mad about it.
Listen, I feel that pain. It's hard. I got very invested in that show too during the pandemic, and I had to end up like subscribing to Paramount Plus just to see season two myself. So I feel you.
And I think season three is going to come out soon.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I definitely enjoyed it. And so I give it a second librarian recommendation. And we'll return to the show after a quick break. Looking for something to do? Check out the Museum Pass program sponsored by the Friends of the Cranston Public Library. We offer library patrons discounted or free admission to local museums and attractions, including the New England Aquarium, the New Bedford Whaling Museum, the Providence Children's Museum, and more. See all we have to offer and reserve a pass at cranstonlibrary.org/passes. Do you love reading and want to chat with people about what you've read? Why not join one of our book groups? There are a variety of meetings happening every month, including our new Fall in Love with Reading Romance book group, the Nonfiction book group, Hidden in the Stacks, YA for Adults, and Reading in the Hall book group. For more information and to register, visit cranstonlibrary.org/book-groups or contact the Central Library Reference Desk at central@cranstonlibrary.org. Happy reading! So I want us to have enough time to talk about what you both came on here to talk about. So I guess let's start at the beginning. How did you guys start Dolls of Our Lives as a podcast? What made you go, let's make a podcast about American Girl?
Well, our story begins way back in 2010 when Allison and I met in a PhD program. We were getting our PhDs in history, some would say an inadvisable life choice, but you know, we're in too deep at this point. We have them. And the whole time we were in our program, you know, people naturally have conversations about what drives you to want to be a historian. And for me, it was reading the American Girl books when I was 9 years old. I got Molly's books first. And there's a section in the back of every book that's called Peek into the Past, where they offer you kind of a brief history of the era in which the story is set. You see photos of material culture objects and people who lived in that time. And I genuinely thought whoever got to write that portion had the best job in the world. I wanted to do that. And so when Allison and I met, we bonded quickly over many things in pop culture, but especially American Girl. And also the fact that people like teased us for citing that as a genuine influence on our professional like life choices. So when we finished grad school, finally, as kind of a gift to ourselves, we wanted to reread the books because something we'd realized along the way is that we were absolutely sure these books influenced us, but had no real memory of the plots of any of the books. And we were holding forth telling people like Felicity lived in Boston. She worked for John Adams. It's like, couldn't have been farther from the truth. She lives in Virginia. She, you know, has a horse, etc. So we wanted to reread the books. And during grad school, I'd gotten into podcasting because I was recording a podcast about people's lives as readers for my research on how people imagine books as medicine in their lives. That's what my dissertation was about. So I knew how to do that. And so it seemed like a good format for us to try to reach people, kind of hear about their experiences as well. And yeah, that's kind of how we began.
We're coming up on 5 years, which I think for podcasts, you have to multiply by 12, you know, like human years, like it's different from dog years or cat years. But 5 years, I don't know, maybe it's more like 20. It feels like, you know, a long time, right? You know, a lot of podcasts don't make 5 years. And even since we've started, you know, podcasting has become very different, right? The landscape has changed. There weren't really so many juggernauts when we started. And I think podcasting still felt a little bit more DIY. And I think we're lucky that we still have a place in what's now a lot more of a corporate landscape, right? You know, when we first started thinking about who our models or our inspirations would be, there were these really fabulous standouts with things like Gimlet, if you're familiar with that network, or, you know, other places where people made super creative narrative or research podcasts. And I think today, you know, things have changed a little bit, but 5 years later, to still be able to have material and to connect with people, I think that's pretty amazing.
For sure. Congratulations to you both.
Our podcast can almost get an American Girl doll. Like, she's bitty baby ready. Like, she could get the bitty baby with like a few accessories, but like halfway to like being an American Girl.
Absolutely. And yeah, I mean, that's kind of scary, but yes, that's true. And to Allison's point about accessibility, I think something that's still so great about podcasting is that to me, it's like an audio zine. Like, I grew up making zines or homemade magazines, and I made some in grad school, still make them. And, you know, podcasting is kind of like a zine. Like, you can accessibly record and put out a show on anything you want. So even though it has become hugely corporatized, which I don't like about it, there's still a path to get into it. So if there's a show that you're passionate about making and you're listening to this, you know, a lot of libraries now have recording spaces, which is really cool, which they didn't have just a few years ago. So there's still lots of paths to get into it if you're interested.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're a librarian going crazy because you're trying to be a librarian from your bedroom in the middle of a global pandemic, you can just ask one of your coworkers, do you want to make a podcast?
Wow.
Yep. And then you're here. So yeah, I get what you're saying. And I think it is hard with how corporatized it's been. But like you said, I think that DIY element is still there. You know, if you have a computer and when you're first starting out, very little equipment, you can still make something that hopefully people will listen to. It's still a way for you to reach them.
Absolutely.
So I guess kind of talking about podcast as a medium leads me well into what made you guys decide to take your podcast into another medium and write your book.
Well, I think, you know, in a larger way, the show was something we started because we wanted to explore our own histories with American Girl at first and, you know, kind of have a reason to stay in touch and to reread these books together. And, you know, you're talking about reaching people that you want to reach. We truly, you know, if you're starting a podcast, you should think about who your audience is going to be. We did not do that. Our audience was very unique. It was like two people. It was us. And, you know, maybe our family members who felt sorry for us or friends, kind of like, we're going to put this podcast here on the fridge, like, great job. And so the overwhelming
A+ podcast,
great job. So proud of you. And, you know, we thought that's what it would be. And we're still genuinely surprised by the overwhelming response to the show. And part of that response included an editor at Macmillan DMing us and saying, have you guys ever thought about writing a book? And we had, before we made the podcast, when we were thinking about different mediums, thought about writing a book, but we decided on podcasting because we thought conversation was really what we wanted and to have people share their kind of experiences back with us. But the book kind of became a way to collect those experiences of generations of people for whom American Girl has been important. And it's really an exploration of not only the history of the brand, but really the history of all of the people for whom it's been really meaningful. So it's not just our story, it's a much bigger story.
I'll say too, they're really different things, you know. So in the podcast, we go back, and if you remember, all of the American Girl historical characters, they started out with 6 books. And across those 6 books, you kind of went on a trajectory with them, right? As they developed, as they turned 10 and had all these different kind of seasonal experiences. So we took that as an outline for our book, but the book really isn't so much about the stories as kind of the wider brand and like people who experienced it and grew up with it. So I think whether you've encountered like just one, or if you have encountered both or neither, you get different things out of them. So like the real deep dives, like an hour plus of content into every single historical character story, all of the movies that are still available, like specific mysteries, that's the podcast. And then the book is really more about a community of people. So different voices that come into it.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting because I almost hearing you guys talk about your experience with the books and having that led to your interest in history makes me almost feel like a fake American Girl fan. So I had a Samantha doll, but I had a Samantha doll because when my mom bought it, it was like right before they introduced the dolls that you could make to look like your child. So my mom looked at the historical lineup of dolls and went, that one looks like my child, a white, brown-eyed, brunette child.
Okay.
So I had her, and I had some of, you know, like her historical outfits and her historical accessories. But I also remember a lot of my childhood was us like buying off-brand clothes, like clothes for 18-inch dolls. So for me, it was more about like the doll and playing with like a small person and taking care of a small person. Then it was like the historical stuff. And there's part of me that feels like I missed out.
I mean, it's never too late.
That's true.
So, you know, you can get back into it. water's fine. But yeah, I mean, I don't think that's a betrayal. I think you were doing what Pleasant Ron, the person who invented American Girl, wanted, which was to have, you know, fun through play with this doll and to use your imagination. I think she was originally inspired by wanting to put girls at the center of the story and to educate girls about America's history, which subsequently they moved away from when Mattel bought American Girl in 1997, I believe.
Mattel, that's who it was.
That's right.
I was like going back and forth. I was like, I don't think it was Hasbro.
Which is ironic because Pleasant was inspired in part because she was critical of Barbie and then ends up selling to the maker of Barbie. But, you know, I think there's many different paths to playing with an American Girl doll. And I don't hear anything that sounds like a betrayal of what Pleasant would have wanted. Right, Allison?
No, and I think you know it's not a Hasbro company because Rhode Islanders would have never let people forget that we created the Mr. Potato Head, et cetera, et cetera.
That's true.
I think Mary's spot on. I think it's all about kind of the experience you wanted to have. We've joked, but, you know, several of my American Girl dolls defected from me for a period of time and became Amish. That wasn't, you know, something for me to hold them back from. That was some like an interest that they wanted to pursue after a family road trip to Pennsylvania. And I think the creativity for some people that meant going really deep into the world of Samantha, which would mean Edwardian America and kind of like transatlantic culture. And but there's so much within the brand, right? People kind of queried out loud, what if Samantha was on the Titanic? And then someone at American Girl took that and ran with it and made an actual book about Samantha having a Titanic connection. So I think there's really nothing wrong with it. The stories, if you're an adult listener, are still really a pleasure to read. Like, I think you'll catch different things, you'll laugh at different things now that you're an adult. And particularly with Samantha, who's an orphan, who's kind of navigating how to make her own family with a grandmother, with an uncle, a future aunt, and, you know, friends that she's bringing in as a chosen family. There's a lot that you'll get from it 30 plus years after it was written that you wouldn't have gotten as a 10-year-old Taylor. So you can still enjoy different things now.
Again, going back to that video, you probably have to rely on the library to get the books in their original iteration of how they were, because right now, American Girl are publishing these like condensed volumes of each of the historical girls.
Yeah, they're called Be Forever.
Yep.
So some characters have only ever had a Be Forever edition.
Mm-hmm.
Good examples of that are Mary Ellen and Nenea. And some people have been like transitioned to a Be Forever format. We've read Julie, right, who exists in a Be Forever format. And you can get her books original style. A number of years ago, I used to have so many extra copies of the original versions of the book, and I had so many of them, it became unmanageable, and I just started dumping them in little free libraries. And the earliest versions of some of those now are worth like more money than you would think. So I just had accumulated so many of certain kinds because people were being very thoughtful and giving some to me, but I wasn't always being like discriminant when I was picking things out. So I'd end up with like 6 Meet Samanthas of various quality, but hold on to them if you have them now. So
yeah, I recently had to weed ours because they were in bad condition from circling. I don't know if necessarily circling since they were originally published, like we probably did buy replacements since then and now, but still. But again, this is something that maybe the layperson doesn't understand, but the public library is not preserving anything. We are buying things for them to circulate and go out, and the act of doing that destroys the material. But the material is fulfilling its purpose. Like it's life purpose to be read and enjoyed by people.
That's right.
And it's going through its whole life cycle. That's why when people are like, oh, I have these author editions or these these author signed editions or these special editions, like, will you take them because I want them to be preserved? It's like, don't bring them here.
Yeah, it's not the place.
I don't know what to do with that.
Absolutely not. I will just add that American Girl just recently put the books of all of its Black characters on their website for free. So it's part of a Black History Month initiative, but hopefully they'll continue to make it available going forward, which is really awesome.
Yeah. If we have room, we'll link to that in the show notes.
Perfect.
So I guess that it's kind of naturally from bringing up my own story kind of leads us back into, so you talked about what brought you to American Girl and what Emma brought you, that American Girl brought you to your interest in history. But I guess what continues to make it an interesting franchise that you want to engage with and continue to talk about?
That's a great question. I think as public historians, something that I'm really interested in is the stories that we tell about our shared past and what influences the choices we make in the stories we tell and the stories we don't tell. And I think American Girl continues to interest me as a place where I see that happening. So I'm really interested in the choices they make of what to highlight in different decades, for example. So they have a doll that's called Courtney that we're going to read next on our show. She's set in 1986, which is the year American Girl was founded, also the year I was born. So that's kind of tough to see myself as history, but moving on. But it's interesting that the sort of challenge or the tragic or dramatic plot point of those books is the Challenger disaster. And there's no mention in the decade of those books of the AIDS crisis. Similarly, we just read the Julie book set in the 1970s, and she lives in San Francisco, never meets a gay person. And so as a public historian, that's really interesting to me. Now, I loved the Julie books. I genuinely loved reading them. So many interesting things in there. But, you know, I might ask as a public historian, why the erasure of gay history from these books? You know, what would have been added by just including some representation? So those are the things that kind of keep me coming back for more.
Yeah, that seems like something that is like a continual through line that's being missed and ignored by those books. Because I can't think of an example. Because again, history is not Well, not again. I'm sorry. I said again because this is a conversation me and one of my coworkers has a lot. She came into librarianship with a history bachelor's degree.
Okay.
There are a lot of different librarians under the sun, but I would say the two major breeds are people who came into a librarianship with an English degree. Me.
Got it.
And people who came into librarianship with a history degree. My colleague and friend, Elise. And so she's talked to us before about like, what did she say? That history is a corkscrew or something? Like it's not as linear and it's not of like moving from progress to no progress.
Right.
As much as we think about it. But I mean, you guys are the experts. Is there an American Girl doll that was in the 30s?
We have 1922 and then we have 1934.
Okay.
So Claudie Wells lives in Harlem in 1922. She is one of the newest. She's a Black character written by Britt Bennett. So they got, you know, a big name millennial author to do her. And then Kit Kittredge is written by one of the original authors, but is still relatively newer. And she lives right in the Great Depression.
Right. Okay. So less in America, but in the 30s in Europe, a lot of major cities were havens for queer people and like actually very accepting. Like there's a whole culture of like queer bars and stuff. Like it still wasn't like super out in the open, like Berlin being one of them, which makes the irony of what happens next even more horrific. So yeah, it's interesting that even though anyone who's familiar with queer history knows that there were pockets of acceptance throughout history, and yet they've never touched on any of them.
I think in the Courtney book, so I think they kind of choose, and I think this is like typical in American Girl. So I think Courtney does become aware of HIV, but it's through a young person who is not identified as queer. It's kind of more of what was like really like fear-mongered in the 1980s about blood transfusions.
Yeah.
And so there's sort of like pockets where they pick up on different histories, but they do it in a very selective way. The Julie books, right, which covers the 1970s, also has Julie becoming a really outspoken advocate of many things. And she meets like disenchanted Vietnam veterans, right? She becomes involved in the environmentalist movement, but she never meets someone who identifies as a feminist.
Mm.
So sometimes even when they pick up certain topics, they just like avoid certain labels or they come at it from a different angle than you might expect.
So like, Courtney interacts with someone who had a blood transfusion that gave them HIV?
So that's part of the second book. So we haven't covered that on the show yet. And I don't know what kind of conversations were had about how they were going to deal with that. But like her central, like early thing that you learn about her, she wants to be a gamer. She's interested in space and Pac-Man. And then as they kind of like added on stories, that is a big part of her second book.
Because I feel like that's, I don't know. For, in my opinion, that's almost the worst way to introduce HIV because of the history of fear mongering and that history of fear mongering is still influencing men who have relationships with men and their ability to donate blood now.
Well, yeah, and it's replicating a historical trajectory, which is that there's a sort of a false belief that the thing that made most Americans accepting of HIV or AIDS or not as discriminatory was the publicity around Ryan White, a child who got HIV through a blood transfusion. So when people saw a child could develop it through a blood transfusion, it raised awareness about the transfusion or the transmission of AIDS and made people more accepting. But, you know, I think people tell that history now, like how sad that it took the publicity of this white Midwestern child who ultimately sadly dies from AIDS to move the needle on public acceptance of people living with this disease. And so I would hope that, you know, 20 something years after his death, that we would think about his life differently and also how we talk about AIDS differently. And I think people do in a lot of other spaces, but it's unfortunate, you know, like Allison said, that we talk about women's rights in the Julie books, but we can't use the word feminism. So to me, that says, you know, they're trying to avoid any kind of controversy, but which is, you know, obviously an issue in history, like it shapes people's interpretations, the stories they want to tell about the past. So again, that gets back to kind of like a public history issue.
Yes, let's take it back to a public history issue, because if we talk more about the 80s and AIDS, I'm going to go on a rant and it's not going to be good.
I don't mind, but
No, I know. I'm sure probably in good company. But yeah, so I think it is an interesting look into how we want American history to be seen, like as a nation. And I think also it's interesting about what we want to teach kids about history, because obviously that's a big hot button topic too, of kind of what narratives are taught to children, and both sides feeling that certain narratives are pushing an agenda. That I think it's interesting that American Girl would have like similar kind of landmines to navigate when making books about history that are their main audience is children. So is there anything else that either of you want our audience to know about your podcast, your book, or American Girl in general and why you love it that we did not touch on already?
Big question. I appreciate it. I would just say that in terms of our book, it's really going to be of interest to anyone who obviously grew up with American Girl, but it's probably something for people who just grew up in the 90s, who want to remember what it was like to attend a birthday party in the 90s or to play with your friends or just that entire era. It's not only just a history of American Girl, it's a history of that period of time, which, you know, could also be of interest to people who don't remember growing up in the 90s. If you're a Gen Zer, people cooler than me, people whose lingo I can't understand, etc.
People who do not remember the 90s but are weirdly fascinated with it.
Deeply invested in a Friends renaissance that I can't understand. As a person who remembers when Friends was on originally, I prefer In Living Color for my money in terms of shows from that period, or Golden Girls, obviously. But, you know, yeah, it's a very strange to see what we're bringing back from the 90s.
Yeah. I'll say too, like, we would be remiss if we didn't thank a librarian named Molly. So during COVID, we tried to check dolls out of the library. And that's something you can do at a number of institutions. I think even before libraries of things became more popular and well known, you could check American Girl dolls out. And during peak COVID, we were calling around to see who would let us check out a doll. And basically one person let me do it. So thank you to Molly. Molly is mentioned in the book. She's a real librarian. That's not a pseudonym. She works in Massachusetts. And that's kind of an interesting facet of it as well.
All right. So we wrap up the show with a segment I call The Last Chapter, which we ask a library or bookish related question. And I thought I would keep it American Girl themed and ask you both, which American Girl do you think that you are most like?
Loaded question.
Yeah, I know.
I'm going to say Molly, even though having reread the books, I'm kind of half convinced that she might be a sociopath and may not be able to answer the question, where were you on January 6th, in a way that I find satisfactory. And yet that is the person I'm going to choose to identify with, for better or for worse.
Yeah, we bonded over both being Mollies, and we have a Discord where people talk about these things. And one of the channels that we made just, you know, unilaterally was why Molly is the best. And we've had people say, why don't we have a channel about this person or that person? It's like, because this was created by two Mollies. This is Molly behavior. This is kind of what it is. And someone asked for feedback the other day and said, you know, someone I know has been described as a Molly. How does she learn to cope with this? It's like, I don't understand the question because I think it's a compliment. Like, I call you a total Molly. I think it's a great thing. She's spirited. She's patriotic. She has wonderful style. She knows how to put together a sweater set and a skirt. Like, to me, there's only positive things about it. So I've kind of stubbornly committed to this choice now for over 25 years. So I'm not going to go back on it. So, you know, Greatest Generation, there we are. We're critical of that concept. But when it comes to Molly, no, it's her. That's it. Also Little Caroline, but that's not a good answer. Are you a Samantha Taylor?
See, I don't know, because I feel like I don't know enough about the rest of them as someone who was not engaged in the books and the girls and their stories. I feel like I would have to look more about that. But I mean, I did grow up in a family that was firmly upper middle class. And I know that's a thing that, like, Samantha gets criticized for by people who don't like her that much. At least I feel like that's the discourse I've heard online, is everyone's all like, Samantha's boring because it's just a story about a rich girl who, like, adopts a girl who's not rich. Because isn't the whole thing of, like, her friend is, like, from a less well-to-do family?
her friend Nellie has to work in a factory. Yes. But here's the thing about Samantha. Samantha would own a Samantha doll and never read the books, but confidently make decisions and conclude. I think you're safe to be a Samantha. We did a 180. We were very critical of her in the beginning and then really came to cherish her stories and a lot of her very positive values, being a loyal friend, being an attentive person. She saved someone from drowning. So you can't, you know, you can't go wrong with that. I think you can be a Samantha happily.
Okay.
I will say that, like, just to kind of put us all on the same footing, someone recently shared with us that Samantha and Molly are made from the same mold. And so in a kind of like she's all that transformation moment, I don't know if you saw that movie with Rachel Lee Cook back in 2000s, late 90s. But there's an iconic scene where Freddie Prinze Jr., when tasked with making an ugly nerd cool, just removes her glasses and suddenly everyone's like, oh my God, she's hot. And in a sense, like that is what Molly to Samantha transformation invites. If you take the glasses off of Molly, you will see Samantha. So in a sense, like you can be a Molly and we can be a Samantha, you know, we can all speak to each other.
Yeah, the way you're saying that, and I'm thinking about, I think the fact that, like, in terms of my mom's choice of which doll looks most like my child, I think Molly got knocked out because of having glasses and having green eyes instead of brown eyes. But, like, yeah, otherwise, very, very similar complexion to dolls. So I think it would have been between, I think it probably was between those two for my mom. That checkered dress is pretty cute, too, though.
She's got a great hat. I mean, I think Samantha's great.
I think, like, I have very few memories of that hat. So I think that hat was in the wind.
Got it. She likes adventure. That's okay. She's brave. She's got beautiful hair.
Oh, wait. Was it like a tricorn hat?
It was not, sadly. Oh. It's a circular hat. I would love that to be true, but it's a beautiful little maroon circular hat with ribbons coming down.
Okay. I just had like a flash memory from my early childhood.
See, there's two paths in the woods, and one is you live in a brain that's free of this information, and we live in brains that are burdened with this information. When someone says, you know, like, what kind of dress did Caroline come in? We're like, it's a pink women's, like, early Republic dress. Like, we have to – you don't have to live with that because we're here and Wikipedia's here, so you're safe.
Okay. I'm torn between living in my Samantha-ness or going and finding a BuzzFeed quiz because I'm sure it exists.
Only you can decide. Don't trust BuzzFeed. Okay. I'm a big believer in that. Like, they've told me that I'm like the worst character on The Office. I don't need that. You know who you are.
I don't need that kind of negativity in my life.
No.
Who's the worst character on The Office?
I want to be safe on the internet. I'm not sharing that. I don't.
Okay. Got it.
I'll live with my peace.
All right. So we're real quickly before we wrap up, where can people find out more about your podcast, your book, upcoming projects, ? Don't want to blow up your spot, but.
We have a website. So if you look up Dolls of Our Lives, you can find easy links to our books and our back catalog, all of our episodes. Also links to social media, Dolls Lives Podcast. We're on Instagram and a number of other platforms, including Facebook. You can find me at Allison Harix, just my first and last name, on all the major platforms.
And you can find me at Mimi Mahoney on Instagram. Happy to chat with folks there.
Fantastic. Thank you both for joining. If you would like to reach out to the show to respond to our last chapter question, or just to reach out, you can do that by emailing us at downtime@cranstonlibrary.org. You can also reach out to the show via the hashtag downtimeCPL. If you're feeling generous, please rate and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts because it helps people find the show. Thank you again for listening. And this has been another episode of Downtime. Downtime is a project of the Cranston Public Library and is produced by Elena Rios, Robin Nizio, and me, Taylor Cardillo. Audio engineering by Dave Bartos. Our theme music is Day Trips by Ketza, and our ad music is Happy Ukulele by Scott Holmes. Links to the books and movies discussed can be found in the show notes. Remember to rate and review Downtime on Apple Podcasts, connect with the podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram with the hashtag DowntimeCPL, and if there's something you'd like to hear on the show, send an email to downtime@cranstonlibrary.org.
The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are the speaker's own and do not represent those of the Cranston Public Library. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. The Cranston Public Library name, in all forms and abbreviation, are the property of its owners, and its use does not imply endorsement or opposition to any specific organization, product, or service. The content of this episode is the property of the Cranston Public Library and may not be reproduced without express written permission. Join us next week for more downtime.
I don't know. I'm digging myself into a hole. Let's get out. Let's get out of this hole. Bye, hole.